In our daily exploration of the great issues of life and death in the Bible, we had come to the point where we were examining the few most popular Bible verses on the subject of what happens when we die. These are supposed to prove that the moment we die, we are immediately alive again in heaven. Our suggestion is that often a single verse will be taken out of its context and made to say something which was never in the mind of the writer who authored it. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 8, is a typical example. That verse speaks of being absent from the body and at home with the Lord. Many conclude from this verse that Paul was hoping for an immediate survival of death and an immediate face-to-face meeting with Jesus the very second he died. This verse is often used as a kind of slogan in support of the idea that there's an immortal spark in us which can survive as our real conscious selves after we die. We attended a Bible study recently where one of those present asked a very reasonable question. She wanted to know why God would assign human beings to heaven or hell the moment they died. She had read in the Bible that judgment happens when Jesus comes back. So how could God sentence people to one of two fates, heaven or hell, before the judgment? It simply didn't make any sense. The question is an excellent one. The answer given her was that Christians are to be absent from the body and present with the Lord. And that was supposed to prove that believers are assigned to heaven before the judgment. But her question remained unanswered. The theory that Paul expected to meet Jesus at his death means that Paul must now, as we speak, be conscious somewhere as a disembodied spirit. At least that is what I was taught as a child. But is that in any way biblical? After questioning many about their expectation for an afterlife, it seems to me to be a well-entrenched idea that all the dead are really alive in one of two places. But is this really what the Bible teaches? Just think for a moment. If Paul was expecting to be at home with Jesus as a disembodied spirit, why in the very context of his remarks in 2 Corinthians 5 does he talk about future resurrection, the future resurrection, that is, of all the saints? Only a few verses earlier, Paul had introduced his subject by saying this: the one who woke up Jesus from the dead will also raise us Christians up with Jesus. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 14. Paul's target was the resurrection from the grave, not going to heaven at death. Paul then went on to discuss the new body, which he was eagerly looking forward to receiving in the resurrection. You see, Paul was entirely single-minded about resurrection. He was not divided, as we often are, with a double objective: first, to go immediately to heaven, then, curiously, still needing to be resurrected in the future. In 2 Corinthians 5, Paul did not want to be without a body. That's the last thing he desired. Yet I keep hearing Christians saying that they are looking forward to being with Christ before the resurrection, that is, in a disembodied state. But what Paul wanted was to be clothed in the new body, and in this new dwelling, to be at home with Jesus. Now that means, of course, that he expected to be at home with Jesus not the second he died, but at the future resurrection. That's when Christians will get their new bodies. That's how they will be able to be at home with Jesus. Bible Christians never expected to go to heaven. They expected Jesus to come back from heaven and wake them up from the sleep of death. There's an enormous difference between these two points of view. So in this very context, in 2 Corinthians 5, Paul said that we desire to be clothed with our new immortal body. His whole discussion in 2 Corinthians 5 is about getting a new body. When that happens, he will be absent from this present body and at home in the new body with the Lord. The great question is, when does Paul expect this change of bodies to come? A very sound principle of Bible study is that one passage must be compared with other passages bearing on the same subject. Well, in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul has exactly the same hope in mind as in 2 Corinthians 5. He speaks about the resurrection at Jesus' return. That is when death is to be swallowed up in immortality. It is only then that Hades, the place of the dead, will be conquered. Paul actually quotes a verse from Hosea in the Old Testament to make his point. He cites the passage where God promised, "I will ransom them from the power of Hades. I will redeem them from death. Where is your penalty, O death? O Hades, where is your sting?" You'll find that in Hosea chapter 13 and verse 14. What a marvelous promise of the victory of God over death. This is the great goal God has in mind as our human destiny. He wants to confer on us the power to live endlessly. For that to happen, God, using Jesus, will bring us back from the land of the dead. He will wake us up from the sleep of death. What he has not promised to do is to make us bypass death altogether. This would make resurrection redundant. There would be no need for it. That is why the idea of man surviving death is so destructive to the whole scheme of God to rescue human beings. Salvation, you know, really means preservation. Preservation from death forever by being brought out of death and by escaping the second death. And all the faithful of all the ages will be resurrected at Jesus' return. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 23, all those in Christ will be made alive at that time. So when Paul spoke of being absent from the body and at home with the Lord, he certainly did not suddenly import an alien idea into his thinking, namely, that he would be in heaven with Jesus the moment he died. No, what he expected was to meet Jesus at the resurrection and on earth. Now, of course, since death in the Bible is like an unbroken sleep, it will seem to Paul, when he awakes, that he was in the resurrection immediately. There would be no awareness of the passage of time. But for us who live now, it's most misleading to say that Paul and the faithful dead have already been glorified. That is to get everything confused. You cannot have life in God's plan except through resurrection. Absent from the body and at home with the Lord means exchanging our present body for the new spiritual body in the future. Jesus must first come back for that to happen. That is when Christians can expect to come into the presence of Christ. Paul said exactly this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 17. Thus we shall be with the Lord always. He had just finished describing the second coming and the resurrection. It would make no sense at all for Paul to say that in this way we shall come into the presence of Christ, i.e. via resurrection, if in fact you could meet Christ long before the resurrection. My wife and I remember so vividly explaining our understanding of this matter to a good friend who was a clergyman of a large denomination in England. We were both encouraged and surprised at his reaction. Yes, he said, I agree with you that this is what the Bible teaches. The dead are now sleeping in their graves. But I would not dare preach that to my congregation. They would not find it acceptable. I fear this friend underestimates the intelligence and honesty of those who sit in pews. I firmly believe they would much rather hear what the Bible really says. They probably do not want to be pacified with any other view. I'm reminded of the words of a Baptist pastor of the late 1800s who was concerned, as we are, with the great question of life after death. He said this, "By a ghastly anachronism, death has been largely substituted for the coming of Christ in the common teaching, and thus a false center has been set up in our view of the future." End of quotation. He went on to say that the idea that we can gain immortality at the moment we die is a practical denial of the resurrection, a doctrine which, as he said, has broken from its biblical moorings. He added that it was the neglect of the teaching about Christ's second coming which had led to the distorting idea that we can gain endless life apart from the future resurrection. We commend the words of this distinguished Baptist pastor to our listening audience. A section of the Baptist Church to this day shares this view of the resurrection and the sleep of the dead with that pastor of the last century. Jesus was the most brilliant exponent of the truth about endless life through the resurrection of the dead. On one occasion, he was confronted by members of a religious group who did not believe in any resurrection at all. These were the Sadducees. They represented the more wealthy in the Palestinian society of Jesus' day. In order to trap Jesus and to make the idea of resurrection look stupid, they asked a tricky question. What happens, they said, if a man who has had several wives in the present life comes up in the resurrection? Which of these various women will be his wife in that future life? The Sadducees hoped to show how impossible belief in the resurrection was. Jesus was more than a match for their subtlety. What he did was to show that the Sadducees were guilty on several counts. First, they were wrong because they did not understand the scriptures. And secondly, they totally underestimated the power of God who could easily raise the dead. And thirdly, immortal persons do not marry and are not given in marriage. Procreation of mortals by immortals is not part of God's plan at all. Then Jesus went on to prove that there is indeed going to be a resurrection. In Matthew 22, verse 31, he said this, "As to the resurrection of the dead, haven't you read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living, Jesus said. Now, what did he mean by this? Did he mean to imply that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were then already alive? If so, how would that prove that there's going to be a resurrection? If Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are alive now, why resurrect them from the dead in the future? How can you resurrect from death someone who is already alive? Our time does not allow us to unravel these questions today, but we will resume our discussion on Monday at the same time. Join us again as we explore the great questions of life after death and the Christian hope of resurrection. These are issues about which none of us can afford to remain in the dark. Tradition, accepted uncritically, often makes it difficult to read the Bible intelligently, but we Christians are committed to following Jesus. It's essential that we grasp his teaching on these great issues about life and death. Until next time, may God bless you in your search for truth.